You're listening to David Kaplan. Weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Welcome back to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, along with Shea Pepler Cornett. I'm Adam Abdallah. You can follow us on Twitter at Adam A. Abdallah and at Shea Pepler. We've been talking all things. We just got the weather report. We've been talking all things Bears and Patrick Mahomes and some breaking NBA news, as it looks like Zion Williamson will miss a, quote, period of weeks, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, with knee soreness. You told us about this, and you're like, guys, this might be a cause for concern. We kind of blew it off. But
knee soreness always equates time off, and it's not good, usually.
So a period of weeks doesn't... That's like the vaguest amount of time ever.
I know.
A few weeks, three.
Could be until 2020.
Weeks,
could be next week.
A period of weeks could be 7 weeks. We don't know. But Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that, and I believe Cubs fans are hoping for some breaking news, whether it's soon or this weekend, that they have a new manager. For more on that, we go to Jeff Passan, who joins us, covers the baseball for ESPN.
And the baseball.
The
huh?
baseball. And, well, it leads me into this. Jeff, you're joining Adam Abdallah and Shea Pepler because Cap is under the weather. He has the shingles.
Guys, I have a question for you. Do you believe in karma?
Oh, come on. Don't do this, Jeff.
Listen, shingles are terrible.
Right?
Like, it's awful. And to sit here making fun of someone for having it, you are going to get crushed.
Oh, I know.
It may not be today. It may not be tomorrow. It may not be this week. It may not be this month. It may not be this year. But it is going to come. I can't go and make fun of somebody who's got a disease that makes him look like a giant pincushion. Like, well, that would be really, really mean.
Is it ironic that it's on like his face as a TV man that is David Kaplan?
Well, like Alanis Morissette, ironic?
I don't know. Yeah, if it's raining on your wedding day, that's the only thing I know that's ironic. That's the only thing I know is how great irony.
They say it's good luck, in fact,
I know,
rain
on
my
wedding
day.
But anyway, we'll get on to more important things than
You guys really wanted me to rip him.
No.
I didn't want you to rip him. I just wanted to know, as someone who covers baseball, I just wanted your opinion. We've gotten to people who cover football and everything. I just wanted your opinion as a newsman on the shingles. That's it.
I will say this. I hope it's not as bad as Tony La Russa's shingles were a few years ago.
Did you see Tony La Russa when he had shingles? Yeah, that was bad.
It was really gnarly. He looked like Sloth from the Goonies. It was terrible.
Oh, hopefully Cap gets better. We love him.
I hope you don't look like Sloth.
So we've been talking about the Cubs and their managerial search, and it looks like it's coming down to David Ross and Joe Espada. A lot of people may not know about Joe Espada. How people might be wanting David Ross to become the manager. Sell me on Joe Espada.
Joe Espada has been around a championship caliber ball club in the Houston Astros for, I think, coming up upon 3 years now. He's got, he's somebody who everybody that they run into really likes. And he's been in successful places before the Astros. He was with the Yankees. He is young. He is bilingual. He is intelligent. He checks a lot of the boxes in what teams are looking for, and AJ Hinch thinks the world of him, and AJ Hinch might be regarded as the best manager in baseball these days. I mean, it's probably Terry Francona. Just historically, Bob Melvin is up there as well, but AJ Hinch is a guy who may be on the verge of two championships in 3 years right now, and Joe Espada is going to have been around for both of them.
So, Jeff, I feel like we ask you this every week, but where do you think this is at? So, according to what we're hearing here in Chicago, it's David Ross is to lose. Joe Espada is basically the second runner-up. If they don't name Grandpa Rossi by the end of the weekend, you'd assume it's Joe Espada, and you'll hear once the Astros are finished. Do you agree with that? Who do you think is the front runner right now for this Cubs manager position?
I think until David Ross doesn't get the job, I'm going to believe David Ross is getting the job. Okay. And part of me wonders if the longer we wait to hear about this, the more it tilts in Joe Espada's favor. But I will say this, guys, and the timing of this does matter. Major League Baseball does not like teams to make major announcements during the World Series. And the World Series is coming up starting on Tuesday. So if David Ross is going to get hired, that's the direction in which the Cubs go, I think it will probably be announced before Tuesday. But if it's not announced by Tuesday, I wouldn't say that the Cubs are necessarily shying away from Rossi. I just think they're abiding by the idea that Major League Baseball does not want large news happening during the World Series.
Jeff Passan joining us here on ESPN 1000 in the ESPN app. Besides manager, obviously, the Cubs have a lot of holes to fill. Which do you think is the most glaring and which is the most fixable?
Boy, oh boy, that's a good question. And that's, you know, that's part of the confusing nature of this team, right? What's the most glaring hole? Clearly the bullpen was pretty glaring at points last season, but, you know, at the end of the year, Kyle Ryan and Rowan Wick were pitching really, really well. And I'm not saying that those are a couple of guys who are going to be linchpins going forward necessarily, but it's the sort of thing that gives you hope that the bullpen can be an effective unit in the 2020 season. Otherwise, if you look through the lineup and if you look in the rotation, are there really any spots where you look at and say that is a glaring weakness? And I'm not asking this rhetorically, guys. I'm asking you, what spots do you see where you say, ugh, glaring weakness?
I don't know if it's glaring, but maybe outfield. I feel like I don't want Albert Almora going out there every day.
Why not?
He's not good. He's not good. Like, I know Jason Hayward's best defensive outfielder.
Are we totally sold at this point that Albert Almora is a lost cause?
I believe so.
This was kind of his year. I don't know. I kind of believe so too.
I look at Albert Almora as a tremendous potential change of scenery guy. Albert Almora is 25 years old, guys. Like, I know that he's been extraordinarily frustrating, really, in the 3.5 years that he's been with the Cubs now. I remember what he was 2 years ago, and he hit 300, and he was slugging 450, and he played Gold Glove caliber defense. And it's that glove and center that makes me really hesitant to trade him. You just wonder if he's going to figure it out somewhere else. I'm with you on the outfield thing. But the problem is they've got a contract they can't move in right field unless they're trading a star along with it. And even then, I don't know if that's going to be enough to move the Jason Hayward contract. And they've got a guy in left field in Kyle Schwarber who doesn't have much of a market at all. And they could move him, but then they're going to have to go out and sign guys. And if they're going out and signing guys, that's spending more money. And they don't seem terribly inclined to spend a lot more money. So this is the puzzle that is the 2020 Cubs. And it's 1,000 pieces, half of which are turned over the wrong way, scattered throughout a 30 by 30 foot room, and you got to get them all together and figure out how to put them in the right place. And that is not an easy thing to do. And it's what makes the 2020 season as daunting as it is, and the 2019-20 offseason as daunting as it is for this organization.
So with that being said, Jeff, regardless of what manager the Cubs do get, do you think that Theo and Jed in this front office is selling this Cubs team as a win now team, or is there inevitably going to be some growing pains with a new manager and movement wherever it is, bullpen, outfield, pick the place. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel like there's too much in place right now for it not to be a win now team, but you look at the downward trajectory of this organization since it won the championship, and you don't want to double down on a losing hand. That's the quandary that the Cubs are facing right now. Do we overhaul? Do we radically overhaul? Do we try and rebuild on the fly? Do we tear things down? Or do we add to what we've got right now? Because we look at, you know, our run differential last year, almost plus 100. We realized that there were a lot of games that we probably should have won that we didn't. And if that's the case, do we expect some regression toward the mean and improvement from what last year looked like? And that, I don't think that's an unreasonable thing, considering the run differential. And I don't want to be blind fealty to run differential, because it is a, sorry, headphones died right there for some reason. It is a flawed metric in some ways, but it shows a lot more than I think we do give it credit for. And it shows the Cubs probably weren't as bad as their record indicated last year.
No, probably not. But like, I think when you look at the years that the Cubs have been contending, you know, I know they've gotten far. They've won the World Series, obviously. In the years that they didn't, you know, they went to a couple championship series. They didn't make it this year. They went to the wild card last year. Are we going to look back and wonder if the World Series year was the outlier, and maybe that's just the year that all these guys kind of peaked? Right? Because I don't think that's what it's going to come to.
Okay, Adam, here's the problem with that premise. And I understand your inclination to do that. I totally, totally get it. But I also look at what some of these other teams like the Washington Nationals are doing right now, and what the Los Angeles Dodgers are doing. Once you get into October, man, anything goes. I mean, this is Theo Epstein's philosophy, too. And it's funny because, we were talking, God, I've been covering baseball for like, I think this is 16 years now. This was probably 12 years ago. And I think I was at Yahoo. And I don't think Theo knew or cared who I was. And he picked up the phone when I called him. And he just like had zero time for me. It was kind of funny. I think he was running on the treadmill. That's what a little pissant I was. He did not step off the treadmill for me. He was running on the treadmill as we were talking. And his, you know, we got to playoffs, and he said, "I want to make the postseason 7 out of 10 years, and if we do that, I feel like success." I was like, "Well, what about what happens in the postseason?" Like, complete crapshoot. And you know what? He's right. Like, if you put together a talented team, it can lose. And if you put together a team that's not quite as talented, it can get hot and win. And so when I look at the differences between 2015 and 16 and 17 and 18, I don't see some sort of like grand change among this team. It had the same core in place, right? Like, the fundamentals were there. I don't think there was some magic juju sprinkled on them when they finally won. I think it was just a really good team that performed in October. And, you know, 17 and 18, 17 in particular, was, I think, a really good team that didn't perform quite as well in October. And 19 was a team that was not quite as good and didn't get a chance to perform in October. So you look at that 7 out of 10 years philosophy, and, you know, if you want to start back in 2015, they're what, you know, 4 out of 5? I think it's a decent start to a decade. But to look at that as, what did you call it, the outlier? I just don't personally see it that way.
All right, let's go to the ALCS. Yankees and Astros play tonight in the Bronx. Yankees are leaving runners in scoring position like they want to. I don't know what is going on with them. At this point, Passan, what's your gauge on the game? Do you think it's the Astros to lose tonight?
Yeah, Justin Verlander's pitching. And I'd like to think, because I did not make fun of Cap, that some sort of I don't know if it's God, I don't know if it's the karmic angels that hang over me, will allow this series to end so I can go see my family, because my kids literally have forgotten who I am. And I don't, people ask me, who do you root for? I root for off days, and I haven't had one of those in a long time. So I say that joking, of course, because I cover baseball for a living. I could not have a better job. But literally, I saw my son on FaceTime yesterday, and he said, "Who are you?"
Oh,
Passan. And then for your
sad,
sake,
that is sad.
Yes,
yeah. Now my Garrett Cole question doesn't seem as interesting now. I mean, now I just feel bad.
We're gonna root for this series to end too.
Who's got it worse? The guy who looks like Sloth, or the one whose children forgot him?
Oh man, that's a toss-up, I think. But I'm a horrible transition to a guy who's going to get a buttload of money in the offseason, and White Sox fans might be interested. Is Garrett Cole going to ask for one of the, if not the richest contract for a pitcher?
Yeah, and he has every right to.
Is he going to get it?
Yes. If he doesn't get it, then there's something wild happened. Like, I just can't fathom a scenario in which he does not get more than the $217 million David Price got. David Price got 7 years and $217 million, coming off a worse season than Garrett Cole had, and being 3 years older than Garrett Cole. Excuse me, 2 years older, because I think he was 31. 2 years older than Garrett Cole is going to be entering free agency. Garrett Cole just turned 29. So Garrett Cole literally has everything you want. He is a power pitcher who has not yet lost his velocity. He's incredibly intelligent and just an absolute tactician on the mound. He cares. He's a good guy. His age starts with a 2. He's pitched well in the playoffs. He's pitched well in the regular season. He has 4 pitches. Like, if you're building an archetypal pitcher around whom to build your franchise, Garrett Cole is what the machine spits out.
All right. Well, thanks, Jeff, for your time, and go Astros.
And go see your kids as soon as this game ends. First plane out.
The rain day messed things up, because I was going to go home on the off day. But there is no off day anymore. So I have not booked a flight yet. I'm going to be taking my giant 60-pound suitcase with me to the game tonight. And I'm sorry, Yankees fans. This is nothing personal at all. But I'm hoping to book a flight home to Kansas City instead of Houston.
All right. Well, we will root for that for you, Jeff Passan.
Absolutely.
You deserve it.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that, guys, but do I want the people who are making fun of a shingles-ridden Cap to be rooting for me?
Now, see, you don't know that I made fun of him. I was just simply calling it the shingles.
All I am saying is that it sounds like a disease that is from the 1920s. That's all I'm saying.
That is true. And Shay, I will say this. I'm with you on putting the in front of maladies. Like, in baseball, one of people's favorite things to talk about is if somebody has the gout.
Yeah,
like
the gout.
Ooh. Like gout, if you want to talk about medieval diseases.
Yeah.
The gout is some medieval stuff. It is the disease of kings. You know how you get the gout, right?
Don't you eat a lot of like liver and like weird meats and stuff?
No. You eat fatty foods and you drink a lot of beer.
Oh, okay.
Gross.
Baseball players. Old-timey baseball players. Like, Babe Ruth probably had gout like 10 times.
I feel like the gout is just like a pure Chicago disease.
Yeah, totally. Probably.
Totally.
Well, hopefully you can get home and stay away from the gout and the shingles.
All right, guys. guys.
Thanks, Jeff.
See you, Fasten.
This hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Catch the Chicago Wolves against their arch-rival Rockford Ice Hogs this Saturday night, part of the Illinois Lottery Cup at the Allstate Arena. Get your tickets at chicagowolves.com. Coming up next, we get the best plays of the weekend from the Philly Godfather. She's Shea Pepler-Cornett. I'm Matt Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
You are listening to David Kaplan.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
The Philly Godfather on Cap and Company.
I spend my life trying not to be careless.
The Philly Godfather on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Shea Pepler-Cornett and Adam Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. In for David Kaplan on Cap and Company. You can follow us on Twitter at Shea Pepler, at Adam A. Abdallah. We bring in the Philly Godfather for the best plays of the NFL Sunday. Philly, how you doing?
Good, man. Just getting ready to fire. Hopefully we can make some more money this weekend.
Yeah, this Bears game seems to be a little bit back and forth as far as the spread goes. It started, at 3.5, went back down to 3. Now it seems to be back at 3.5. How do you see this one?
Yeah, the good news is Kamara hasn't practiced all week. Either has their tight end Jared Cook or Tre'Quan Smith for the Saints. So it's a huge game for the Bears, who are looking up at the Packers and Vikings in the standings. And with the Lions being so dangerous, the Bears really need this one. And I think they actually win the game and cover the spread. As great as the Saints have looked this season at 5-1 without Drew Brees, this team has only, has only a +6 point differential. And every single victory they've had this year has come, I think, by a touchdown or less. So they really haven't been playing. I mean, they're winning these games, but they're barely winning these games. And they haven't played an opponent with top-10 defense all year. Teddy Bridgewater has done a great job as a game manager, not turning the ball over. But when you look at the opposing defensive line he's going up against, none of them rank in the top-10 in sacks or the adjusted sack rate. Now they got to come down to Chicago, play one of the league's most feared defenses, who allows just under 14 points per game this season and forced 10 turnovers. I like the Bears here. If you can lay 3 on the game, I think you cash a ticket. And if you can go under 38.5 on the total as well, I think you'll make some money.
I was going to ask you about the total. It's 38 again. It seems like every Bears total is right at 38. Is that in this modern NFL, have you seen anything like this where the Bears like total is constantly under 40?
Man, like I said, this defense is so good. They force so many turnovers. I mean, who else is lining up under 14 points a game? I think you're still making money because the Saints have a solid defense, and they don't take big shots down the field with Bridgewater. So I'm expecting a conservative game by both teams, especially with the offensive weapons that might be out for the Saints. So I like the under and the Bears.
All right, Philly, let's go around the league. Eagles at Cowboys. Cowboys coming off an embarrassing loss to the Jets. Eagles need to bounce back. How do you see this game?
Yeah, Garrett's team, 3-point home favorite over my beloved Eagles. Combined total set of 47.5. Since the market opened, there was some early money that entered on the Eagles at +3, which forced the odds makers to adjust their price below that key number down to 2.5 on the Cowboys. The total has also seen a small 1-point uptick in the market. It currently sits at 48.5. This game really isn't easy to handicap with all the injuries on both teams. But as more and more information enters the market, it seems like the Cowboys are just a more wounded animal. So when there's a ton of injuries like this, you throw all the metrics, all the analytics out the window, and you try to rely more on game theory more than anything to try and identify an edge. The Cowboys could be without their starting cornerbacks. It looks like they're also going to be missing two huge components on their offensive line with Smith and Collins out for the second straight game. And if wide receiver Amari Cooper doesn't play, which it looks that way, they could be in serious trouble, man. I'm not sure if the Eagles are the better team when both teams are at full strength, but headed into this game, Philly's just the healthier team of the two squads. And after getting blown out in Minnesota, I think you're stealing money catching 3 points on the Birds here in Dallas. I like the Eagles here +3. I think they win the game. You got a shot at the money line at +140 as well.
All right, so the money line play as well. So the Cardinals and the Giants face off. The Giants, a 3-point favorite at home. It opened at 3. It's still pretty much at 3. How do you see this one?
Yeah, I mean, Saquon Barkley's back, and the market reacted real quickly. The initial opener was at 1. The game's going to 3 now. It's painted 3 across your screen, like you said. We got two teams here who both rank in the basement in opponent yards per play metric and overall defensive efficiency. And with the weather not looking to be a problem, you got to expect some points in this one. I like the Giants at anything at minus three or less or under a field goal. The team's dynamics on offense changed dramatically when Barkley was on the field. If you remember, the Giants averaged 7.6 yards per carry and 140 yards on the ground in the first two games with Saquon Barkley. And since week three, when he injured his ankle, their rushing totals unsurprisingly dropped to 3.8 yards per carry and 88 yards per game. The Giants should be able to run the ball down the Cardinals' throats. Arizona gives up the sixth most yards per rush attempt in the NFL. And I'm expecting the G-men to control the time of possession battle. Then you add the fact that the teams with weak offensive lines like Arizona, who comes in ranked 28th in pass protection, really tend to struggle on the road. I like the Giants here. Both teams' net yards per play differential is basically the same. And New York actually gets a boost to their offensive production numbers with, Barkley playing against this horrible defense. I like the Giants here, minus three. I think they cover this pretty easy.
Okay, Packers are somehow 5-1. They welcome Oakland, who's coming off a bye to town to Lambeau Field. How do you see this one, Philly?
Yeah, I like the dog here, plus six, if you can find it. And I think it might be 5.5, 6 floating in the market. Like you said, the Packers were lucky to steal victory last week over the Lions. They beat up on a Cowboys team who were decimated with injuries on their offensive line and were given gifts, from the Bears, Vikings, and Broncos. Let's all be honest. And as great as Aaron Rodgers is, in my opinion, Green Bay is probably the most overrated 5-1 team in football. Their injuries keep piling up. Eight players didn't practice on Thursday. I think Adams, Allison, Scantling all missed practice on Thursday. Tight end Jimmy Graham was out, and their backup tight end was out as well. I think the Chiefs in Green Bay has some big holes in it this week, and they're going up against an Oakland team that ranks 5 spots better in yards per play metric, almost 10 spots better in yards per rush attempt, and has a top 5 offensive line in pass protection. And on the defensive side, Oakland gives up more than a half yard less per play on the road than the Packers do at home. I like the dog here, plus 6.
So, to recap, you like the Raiders plus 6, the Giants minus 3, the Eagles plus 3 with a little bit of a sprinkle on the money line, and the beloved Bears minus 3.5 and a little bit on the under as well. If people want the rest of your plays, Philly, where should they go?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Philly Godfather, and you can go to thephillygodfather.com. And if you guys want to go under 47.5 in the Florida game, both defenses are stingy. They give up right around 4 yards per rush attempt, and they're expecting wind gusts blowing up anywhere from 35 to 40 miles an hour in this game, which is a real possibility and a 40% chance of rain. So if you want, bet the under there.
All right. Thanks a lot, Philly. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Philly.
Good luck, guys. Good luck.
That's the Philly Godfather. Follow him on Twitter at Philly Godfather. Visit thephillygodfather.com. And if you want Cap's best plays, we are in for David Kaplan, Shea Pepler, Cornette, Adam Abdallah here on ESPN 1000. At the Catman gave out his picks to us earlier today. He went the Bears minus 3.5. No surprise there. He took the Colts minus 1 and the Falcons, begrudgingly by me, the Falcons plus 3. Those are Cap's best plays of the weekends, and Philly gave you his. And I know that Carmen Yurko will have some plays as well, as Mike North will join them later in the show. And you can hear Doug Kazarian on with Waddle and Sylvie later today. For all of your gambling needs covered, make sure you check out the Odds Couple later on tonight and on the Pod Center on ESPN.com. Let's go out to Leatherneck in Arlington Heights. Leatherneck, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, guys. Listen, I'm 41 and whatever. What I'm going to tell you about the Bears this Sunday is Khalil Mack needs to step up. He's the most overrated player that has ever produced himself in Chicago. We gave up 2 draft picks and a 3rd and a 4 and $9 million a year for him, and he did nothing last week. And I thought the whole argument, I called in Waddle and Sylvie 2 years ago when they did it, or a year ago when they did it, and make players better. We done. Show me. Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald had 20 sacks last year. 20. How many did
Okay. Leatherneck, your phone's breaking up, but we get your point. You don't like Khalil Mack, which is a crazy take. Khalil Mack, according to Pro Football Focus, is the number one top rusher in the NFL. This is what they write. Mack has been a force off the edge for the Bears in his second season in Chicago and leads all edge defenders with a 91.5 pass rushing grade through 6 weeks. From 191 pass rushing snaps, he has racked up 5 sacks, 2 hits, and 21 hurries. I don't... if you don't think Khalil Mack is making an impact, I think you might be watching like a Cardinals game or something.
He
like,
had
you're
a
not
bad
watching.
Game. Not even yeah. a bad game. They just knew how to limit him. They went to the other side of the defense when they were running the football. I mean, what do you want?
The whole defense had a bad game. They couldn't make up for the loss of Akeem Hicks. The entire defense had a bad game.
They had a bad game.
Yeah.
And it's uncharacteristic of this defense. And to answer Leatherneck's question, 12 and a half sacks last year. It's not like he had two, okay? Yeah. And Aaron Donald had 20.
He had double-digit sacks. And he's on pace for double-digit sacks this year.
And on top of that, the dude affects 80 to 90% of the plays the defense makes every single game.
Yeah.
He's a threat no matter what, even if he's not touching the quarterback.
Exactly.
Leatherneck, you crazy.
He's crazy. That's okay. Some people have hot takes, and we are going to give you the absolutely hottest take of the weekend coming up. But Shay, I am not only the co-host of Chicago's College Tailgate with Chris Bleck and Jonathan Hood. Come check us out tomorrow. Bat 17 in Evanston, noon to 3, we'll be there drinking delicious, refreshing Coors Light. I'm actually going to make a mimosa out of Coors Light and try that. I'm sure it's delicious.
Sounds gross, but
drink
okay.
It regardless. But yes, not only am I that, I'm also the producer of Waddle and Sylvie. And part of my job as a producer of Waddle and Sylvie is to procure the Waddle's World stories. I just give him the stories. I go to various websites, I print out these stories. He doesn't like all of them. So coming up next, not only are we going to give you the absolute hottest takes of the weekend, but I'm going to give you a few of the rejected Waddle's World stories. Ones that Waddle is just like, there's too many words in this one I'm not reading. There's a graph or something. I'm not going to read that one. So that's what I will do coming up next here on Cap and Company with Shea Pepler-Cornett, Adam Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Coming up at noon, it's Carmen and Yurko. We're wrapping the week on a Football Friday, talking Bears and Saints and the head coach. That's right, Sean Payton, the head coach of the Saints, will join the show to talk to his old college teammate, Yurko.
The important thing to note, Carmen, is the Grammy and Tony Award-winning Keys to the Game will be released on Friday. That's right.
You're going
to
sing them?
The Good Kid will give you the insight on what the Bears have to do to win.
Join us coming up at noon for another Football Friday at Twin Peaks in Warrenville on ESPN 1000.
Check out the guys at Twin Peaks. It's Shea Pepler-Cornett, Adam Abdallah in for David Kaplan. Cap and Company. Follow us on Twitter at Shea Pepler, at Adam Abdallah, at Adam A. Abdallah. It'd be nice if I knew my own Twitter handle. And it's time now for the absolutely hottest take of the weekend. Brought to you by Apt Electronics, as it is the absolutely hottest take. For complete satisfaction, free delivery, and a better service, shop Apt. That's ABT. Pleasing people since 1936. So the hottest take of the weekend. I would say, well, ladies first, give us your hot take first.
Okay, Trey Burton will score a touchdown this weekend.
Okay.
Through four games, only 11 receptions for 57 yards. Last year, he had 6 touchdowns. He was instrumental in connecting with Mitch Trubisky and putting points on the board for the Chicago Bears. Matt Nagy said yesterday at Halas Hall, I could see him jumping in a little bit more now that he's feeling a little bit better. That's part of the plan. They want to ease him back into this offense. This is Trey Burton's week. I'm not saying the offense clicks on all cylinders, but I'm saying it is better when Trey Burton is healthy and playing well. He notches 6 for the Chicago Bears this weekend.
Wow, okay. That would be good for the Bears. Absolutely. My hottest take of the weekend is, I don't know if it's going to happen this weekend, but because Trubisky is coming back from injury, my hottest take is going to be, this is not the last we've seen of Chase Daniel as quarterback for the Bears. He will play again as quarterback for the Bears, whether it's because of injury or because of bad play. We will see Chase Daniel under center again for the Chicago Bears. That I don't like the shoulder being just popped right back in. It's more susceptible to pop right back out. And maybe they'll put it back in on the sideline.
Did they have to put it back in on the sideline?
It went back in. Yeah, it went right back in.
That shoulder just... I don't know the sound it would make.
Okay, but that was like over 2 weeks ago now, though.
It still could pop out again. Danny?
Guys, this is more of a big picture hot take. Zion Williamson, a severe injury has been ruled out on his right knee, but he's still going to miss a quote-unquote period of weeks. If you remember, he hurt that same right knee when he was at Duke and his shoe blew out. Yep. And this summer he missed time because he banged up his left knee. My hot take is, and I hate to say it, Zion Williamson is not going to play until the month of December.
No.
December?
Come on,
he's going to miss the entire
The sports
months
world,
of October and November.
The sports world cannot afford to lose Zion Williamson and Patrick Mahomes. Like, we just can't. We can't have that.
Let's be honest. As long as football's going on, no one's going to miss Zion Williamson. Come February, that's when the world will turn its sights to Zion.
He's kind of right.
I'm not okay with it.
He's kind of right.
I'm not okay
with it. Once we get to the All-Star break, then yeah, Danny's kind of right. Chris Black!
See, you guys come out here with these takes, and I'm here to fire off on your takes. Lukewarm take there, Danny, because if you do the math, we're only like 6 weeks away from December. So really, if he's out 5 to 6 weeks, expected take from you. Shay, your take, Trey Burton scores. If Trey Burton scores, that would be okay, but it's not really stepping out on a ledge. Abdallah, what are you doing there? Daniels is going to play? Of course. Yes, we know. At some point, quarterbacks get hurt, and someone's have to come in. So, yes, Chase Daniels going
Daniel.
To play. It doesn't matter.
All both of them. Both Daniels.
By
both
the way,
Daniels.
If Zion doesn't come not back until December, that's 19 games. He's going to miss 19 games. Yeah. It's a hot take.
They're not going to be
not
that
really.
Good anyway.
What's your
Luke
take,
Warm
Black?
At best.
Give
how about this,
us.
Guys? Ready? Tariq Cohen, not very good.
Just in general?
And to throw in there, he's not fast enough to be a difference maker in the NFL. For his size, he needs to be faster. The hot take is... he's not that good. He's a gadget player, not a starter, not a difference maker on the offense. I would like for him to score this weekend since Zerriman, Tracy Butler, and I are starting him in our fantasy team, but he's not that good. That is a take. Take that.
Okay, well,
now, hold
of
on
all,
real quick.
Wait. No.
You know how you know that's a hot take? There's a dude standing outside listening, and when Bleck said that, he went like this. Ooh.
Take that. Take that.
Okay. First of all, do I have amnesia or... did Tariq Cohen make the Pro Bowl last year? Remind me.
We all made the Pro Bowl.
This lady walking by made the Pro Bowl.
No, she didn't.
Enough people back out, you're going to be in the Pro Bowl,
Shay. Correct me if I'm wrong. It took Akeem Hicks how many seasons to make his first Pro Bowl? I think it's a pretty big deal.
As a returner, he might be okay, Shay. I'm talking about a difference maker on offense. He's a gadget player. He's
Black,
not fast enough to be a difference maker.
Nobody has been a difference maker on this offense because the offense has been inept.
Has Tariq Cohen been healthy this season?
Yes.
So why hasn't he made a difference?
Concussed.
No one has. Nobody. Anthony Miller hasn't made a difference. Taylor Gabriel, yes, has been concussed, but hasn't made a difference. Yeah. Allen Robinson has barely made a difference.
So are you suggesting that there's differences to be made by this offense?
Yes,
so
not just Tariq Cohen.
That?
Why doesn't he get the ball? 17 carries.
What's
17.
Going on there?
Talk to the offensive line. Talk to the quarterback. Talk to the offensive coordinator. Talk to the head coach. I don't know, but don't blame it all on Tariq Cohen.
To be honest, guys, if you want to grade my take, I don't think it's that hot because I think it's an honest take. Take that.
And that was the absolutely hottest take presented by Apt. All right, guys, like I mentioned before the break, it is part of my job as the producer of Waddle and Sylvie, which I will do after this, is to procure the Waddle's World Stories for one G. Thomas Waddle. And then he goes through them, picks out the ones that he likes, reads them, and the rest of them get left in the Waddle's World folder. So I've come through the Waddle's World folder to bring you some Waddle's World rejects. Are you ready? A 3D printer has made meat in space. The prospects of astronauts tucking in a roast dinner has grown slightly closer after a successful experiment had used a 3D printer to create meat on the International Space Station. They've printed meat.
I don't get it. Is it edible?
But can you eat it?
Yeah. The bioprinter produced beef, rabbit, and fish tissue using magnetic fields in microgravity. A Russian medical technology company involved in the experiment said Wednesday. The experiment, an international collaboration involving U.S., Russian, and Israeli companies, was carried out in September by cosmonaut Oleg S. That's his last name, S. I can't. In the station's Russian segment, using a 3D printer developed in Moscow. They made meat out of a 3D printer.
Okay, armchair nutritionist.
Armchair nutritionist. Would
Gross.
You eat 3D printed meat?
Here's why I wouldn't. I've Googled the story you are speaking of. They made the meat from plant-based proteins. If you're going to eat meat, just eat meat. None of this Beyond Burger crap.
But they can. They're in space.
Then no, I'm not eating it.
Meat in space.
I'm not
eating
it.
If you were about
it.
To
it's
say
weird.
Yes, I was going to leave.
So does this mean if they can create meat with a 3D printing machine that they can go to a new planet, perhaps, and to start life?
Yes.
Right, like if Matt Damon in The Martian had this printing machine, could he have something other than potatoes?
Why not? I don't see why not.
Why don't they use that technology for good and go to countries where people are hungry and feed them?
They might.
I'm down for that.
All right, Halloween is coming up. It's right around the corner. As we found out, Tracy doesn't like the Halloween kids.
Don't start that rumor.
No, I know. She loves everybody. Halloween candy map reveals which state prefers what? Illinois' favorite candy?
Snickers.
Let us guess.
I'm having you guess. Snickers? No.
Candy corn.
No.
I love
candy corn. Listen, the haters of candy corn are out of their mind. It is delicious and somewhat nutritious.
Gross.
I'm going to go with Twix.
It's not Twix.
Okay, wait. Is it chocolate?
Not chocolate.
Oh, it's not. Skittles.
No.
Shoot.
Oh, those little bubble gums that you get that get hard in a second.
Gum isn't candy.
Such a bad pick.
Yeah, gum's not a candy.
Bubble gum?
No. People give that
gum
out. Have you never been trick-or-treating, Shay?
Oh, those
Danny,
are houses
that will
get eggs.
I know you don't eat the candy. Yeah.
But I've been trick-or-treating and I have kids.
Okay. Just tell us.
Illinois' favorite candy is the Jolly Rancher.
Well, oh, no, it isn't.
That's
Jolly.
Terrible.
I'm reading an article. Wisconsin has the pretzel M&M for some reason.
That's why Wisconsin is so cool.
Most of the country is Reese's, and much like the rest of our state, our city of Chicago is not like our full state. The city of Chicago's favorite candy is, can you guess?
Is it chocolate based?
This is chocolate based.
Kit Kat.
It is Kit Kat.
Our state sucks.
Take that, Pepper.
Chicago is the
Rancher?
Only major city that enjoys Kit Kat. New York likes M&M's. LA likes the Jolly Rancher. Houston is more of a milk dud town. Let's see. Columbus likes the M&M's, as does Fort Worth. Austin is
a
Reese's city.
I think I got one. Here we go.
I'm just talking to myself at this point.
I'm listening.
And finally, did you see this? Did you hear this? Finally, a missing Australian woman found in the outback after her SOS message was spotted on a security camera. She did the lost. She drew SOS in the sand. Someone saw it on a security camera, and they found the missing woman. Deborah Pilgrim, age 55. She was missing for a few days, and then they found her.
Okay. Abdallah.
Yeah.
I love you.
Mm-hmm.
I see why these weren't used.
No, the candy one was good. I feel like the candy one should have been used.
The candy one was good. And we got to talk about fake meat.
No, it made me mad.
Anyway, thank you to Adam Johns. Thank you to Tracy Butler. Thank you to Jeff Passan and the Philly Godfather. And we honestly, as much crap as we gave Cap, we hope he feels better.
No, yeah, we do.
Please get well soon, Cap. For Shea Pepler, Cornette, Danny Zetterman, Chris Black, I'm Adam Abdallah. Thank you for listening. Carmen and Yurko are next live from Twin Peaks in Warrenville here on ESPN 1000.